Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Ask a PI Talk Radio with hosts David Duchesneau, author, PI, former Marine, and former New Hampshire State Trooper, and Rusty McDonald, PI, author, motivational speaker, and international radio talk show host.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's Monday night here in New Hampshire, and I am recovering from a very nasty head cold, so hopefully you can hear me okay. David's on the line tonight, and he's got a lot to talk about in regards to valuable information that we can actually use. For example, how to locate your insurance policy or how to retrieve your military records. Excuse me. And that's really exciting, David.
Well, I want to welcome everybody to the show tonight. And anybody who's listening, if you're interested in any of this information, I would definitely suggest that you get a piece of paper and a pen handy, because we're going to give out quite a bit of information that can be useful to everybody. So, first off, Rusty, other than your cold, how are things going?
You know, I am really excited. I have my first book launch of the year on Sunday, and I have all of your books ready to also push, and it seems like it's going to be quite an event. I'm very nervous and humbled and excited at the same time. So, I never thought it would happen. I never thought the day would happen, so...
Congratulations.
Doing well in that world. Thank you. Thank you. Really, really humbling moment.
Well,
how
I can
are
tell you?
You,
getting a book out, you know, it's very exciting. I mean, when I publish my first book, it's fantastic. You know, and I'm getting ready, you know, getting the second one ready to get published. And I was speaking to the publisher today. And,
yay.
You know, and that's exciting.
I'm so
exciting.
Excited about it.
So.
You are found in a couple of new places, as far as I understand.
Yeah, I was
you can
told
find
today that I'm on two sites, which I was surprised and overjoyed by that. One of them being I'm on the police officer's website. It's Police Writers, and. They have that on www.police-writers.com. And I'm also on the military site, United States Marine Corps section, military writers website, which is www.militarywriters.com, Marine Corps, /David_Duchesneau. And
yay.
They brought that to my attention today. My publisher did, and I thought that was exciting. I was really pleased with that. So the book is
really,
getting plenty of. Excuse me.
Yeah, no. I think it's amazing how we don't really know how far our information goes. I think we should do a show on that. You know, in regards to, you know, a book or a text or anything like that, it really goes quite the distance. And nowadays, I think it's really hard to know where all of your stuff is at all times. Does it make sense?
Yeah, but it's so difficult because, I found out that a lot of things the publishers do that we don't know about. And because, obviously, the more books they sell, the more money they make. And so they're pushing the work, especially if you have a good product that's out there, a good book that's a good read. And I know that my book is a good read, and I know that the ones that you have are going to be very good reads also. And so, you know, I urge everybody who's listening, you know, to pick up a copy of our books, because we took a lot of time and dedication and perseverance to make this happen.
Well, and it was funny. I was talking to someone who was excited for me, but also concerned, because I have 9 books coming out this year. And if you
That's
would
amazing.
Sit back and really count how many hours it takes to write a book, just the first draft, we were estimating it's about 500 hours, you know. And 2 of the books I started last year, so I have a head start. 3 of the books, they're anthologies that I'm co-authoring in, so that, you know, it's not as crazy. But, you know, really considering how many hours there are in a year, it is a lot of dedication, and it is a lot of time. And really, after marketing and the time and the energy and purchasing the books from the publisher, unless you're fortunate enough to, you know, be scooped up by a warehouse, but they also charge you for publishing fees, you make about $1.87 a book when all is said and done. You know, so it's definitely a labor of love, I think.
Yes, it is. It certainly is. Well, I think it's time to get on with this show. And you know, and what we're going to talk about tonight, I think, has a lot of relevance to a lot of people. I get asked, I mean, I don't know how many times a month I see it come out on different emails that I get through the different private investigators organizations, and they're always looking for 2 biggest things that they're looking for. The ones we indicated here is how to locate an insurance policy of a deceased or a loved one. And the other one is, you know, how to retrieve military records. And I'm going to address the first one here. You know, life insurance policyholders, you know, they often fail to inform the beneficiary that there's an existing life insurance policy. And as a result, the death benefits for many life insurance policies may go unclaimed. They don't only may go unclaimed, they do go unclaimed. Insurance companies would like to distribute what is rightfully due, but the responsibility to claim the benefits lies with the beneficiary. And it is possible that millions of dollars in life insurance proceeds go unclaimed by beneficiaries from the United States and in Canada. And we have a service that we can go to. We have a website. It's called M. Mary I. Ida B. Baker. And it's www.mibpolicylocator.com. And policy locator is all one large word. And in that company can find out whether or not there's a life insurance policy which was taken out by a relative, by a parent, or anybody else that is related to you that is now deceased. And so it's very important, because it's almost like that, you know, unclaimed money. You know, missingmoney.com. I mean, I don't know if people know that they can go on that site. There's no cost for anything. Anybody can search on that site, Missing Money, and all you have to do is put somebody's name in, and they'll tell you within seconds whether there's money which is being held by the state, because if it goes to probate, eventually it goes to the state if it's unclaimed. And the states do list these, and it's all in Missing Money. And that's a very good site for people to go on If you think that even if you have money that has been unclaimed, when I was in the state police, I was out of Troop A back in the 70s, and I belonged to the state credit union, and I forgot all about it, and I put my name, my own name, in missingmoney.com, and it came up that I had $175 still unclaimed in that credit union. Now, I forgot all about that, because by the time, you know, back in the 70s, like I said, so with interest and everything else, it was more than $175. But the idea is, I forgot all about that. And then I found one in my uncle's name who has been deceased for a long time, and he lived up in Hiram, Maine. And this is when my father was still alive, God bless his soul. And I notified my father and said, you know, you probably should claim that because we have, you know, his brother's death certificate. And we wrote to the state of Maine and produced the death certificate. And my father did get that unclaimed money as being the next of kin. So you can see how important it is that if you know where to go and you know where to look, and if you think there's something there, especially if it's like an insurance policy, you want to claim that. I mean, why should the states hang on to that? You know, there's no reason at all. So on an insurance claim or an insurance policy, again, the website is www.mibpolicylocator.com. And if you meet the criteria, and there is some criteria that you have to meet, and you pay the fee, because there is a fee that has to be paid, it's $75, which is well worth it if you think there is an insurance policy out there. They can search every database there is that has to do with insurance policies, and if they locate an insurance policy, they will give you the information, the policy number, where it's located, and you can claim that, like I said, as long as you meet the criteria, and you have to fill out the proper form. And that proper form is right in the website. I mean, you can download the whole thing. And so this is a great piece of information that everybody should have and should keep. And when somebody, you know, unfortunately becomes deceased and you think that there is an insurance policy somewhere, you know, you want to get a hold of these people at MIB and you want to search for that policy. You want them to do that. And for the pittance of $75, let's face it, I mean, most of these insurance policies are $10,000 and up, especially today. You know, before when I was a kid, I mean, you know, my parents opened up an insurance policy on me, you know, with Prudential for $5,000, and I had four of those, and I still have them. You know, they're all paid. I don't do anything with them. They're just sitting there, and they make money. But yet I notified, because it's in my will where everything is, but a lot of people don't have a will. And you'd be surprised how many people don't even have a life insurance policy. I mean, it's amazing. And I don't know what they expect, but I mean, yes, does a life insurance policy do anything for you? No. It's what it does is for the people that we leave behind. You know, it buries us. It pays for the funeral and everything else. And if you're lucky enough to have a large amount of insurance, then your relatives, obviously, or your beneficiary, obviously, will benefit from that. But this is one of the things, like I said, that I see I don't know how many times a month, you know, how do I find a lost life insurance policy? You know, and the same goes for a safety deposit box. I don't know why people don't tell people, their relatives, that they have a safety deposit box. Oftentimes they do not. And the only way that you're going to find a safety deposit box that belonged to a relative is you're going to have to do your own investigative work. And I had a friend who passed on, and I know he had a safety deposit box. And after he passed, I went to his family. I went to the eldest son, and I asked him point blank if he located the safety deposit box that his father had. And he said no, he didn't even know he had one. And I told him, well, he did. And he asked me how he could locate it. I said, you want to locate it? I says, by utilizing every resource that you can. Unfortunately, this friend of mine dealt with cash mostly, but he did have a checkbook. So I told this individual to go to the bank where the checks were issued and check at that bank. And I says, and when you're going to check on everything, bring a copy of your dad's death certificate with you so that you can prove that he's, you know, deceased, and ask them to search their records to see if there is a safety deposit box in his name. Now, what happened in this instance, my friend, unfortunately, traveled all about the Seacoast, and he had stuff everywhere. So the only advice that I could give the family was to physically go to all these banks and check to see if there's anything there. They did find some money that he had on missingmoney.com, which was ironic because that was an easy find. But they never, to this day, located his safety deposit box. And I can remember, like I said, when I was with this individual, when he was alive, he told me that he had a safety deposit box and that he had a lot of his valuables, which included gold and included cash that he would put in it. And to my knowledge, that has not been located yet, and it's been over 10 years. So, I mean, somewhere, someday, sometime, it's going to come up, it's going to reappear, because someday the bank will have to do something with that box, because they do have a record of how many times people go into the bank and go into their boxes. So when they find that there's no activity over a certain number of years, common sense would say that they would have to do something with it. Whether they do or not, I don't know. But anyway, like I said, somewhere it will show up eventually. But these insurance policies, those are the ones that are very valuable. And you can go to MIB and you can make an online order, United States only, which is the quickest option. And the prerequisites of doing that is you have to validate of the customer's identity, online validation of insured's demise, and there's no death certificate required, and you got to pay by credit card the $75 fee. Or if you don't want to do it online, you can do it by mail, and this is both U.S. and international. There used to be a lot of people that would hide money in a lot of places, especially in the Cayman Islands and all these other islands, the Kirk and Caicos and a lot of these islands. If they traveled, you know that they traveled to any of these locations on vacation, it would behoove you to definitely look there. And so by doing it by mail, the prerequisites are a notarized application form required to confirm identity. The original death certificate is required. The payment by credit card or money order. And you submit all the materials that you have by mail. And it gives you an address to where to send this information to. And so, you know, and the statistics are just unbelievable about how much money is out there. Because each year, thousands of insurance policies may be surrendered to the state because family members are not aware of their existence. So, you know, this is something, like I said, that everybody can use, and everybody should, you know, make note of it and have it handy because there may be a time that you want to use it. Now, the other thing that I see happening frequently, again, online through these different emails that I get, how do I get my military records? Well, getting the military records, by the way, this was updated March 3rd of this year. It used to be a little bit difficult, but it isn't. But if you want to find out if somebody is a current active member of the armed forces, you can go on a website, which is www.dmdc, that's David Mary David Charlie, .osd, Ocean Sam David, .mil, M-I-L. And you can request anybody's information, whether or not they're in the military. Now, they're not going to tell you anything about their military service other than to verify that they are in the military, and that's for current member status only. But if you're a veteran and you want to get a copy of your DD-214 for whatever reason, then you have to do it yourself. You have to be the one that is requesting it. And you request it from the National Personnel Records Center, which is, just as I said, the address is National Personnel Records Center, 1 Archives Drive, St. Louis, Missouri, zip code 63138. But the quickest way to request your military service team or your records is by calling the National Personnel Records Center at 314-801-0800. You can also fax a request at a fax number of 314-801-9195. Now, I gotta just want to educate people on this DD-214. That form, DD-214, tells everybody that you were an active veteran in the United States Armed Forces. That's how important that document is. And you get a copy of that, your DD-214, when you are discharged from the military. But if the person that has that DD-214 is deceased and you can't find it, then if you're the next of kin, you can request a copy of anybody who's related to you, a copy of their DD-214. And you do it from the same place, the National Personnel Records Center, and you have to put it in writing, and you have to state why you want it. And there's a number of reasons why you would want it. If you know that the individual that is deceased was a military veteran, and you want to have a military funeral, you're going to have to produce that DD-214 to the funeral director. Without it, you're not going to have it. It's not going to happen. If there's any insurance, especially if they were lifers, and I mean by that they put 20 or more years in the military, they may also be an insurance policy attached to it. So that's how important it is to get that DD-214. And if you want to have a plaque at the burial site for that individual, again, you have to have that DD-214 because it's this discharge papers which shows that he is a veteran or she is a veteran. And that's the only way you're going to get a plaque. And the plaques are either a granite plaque or a bronze plaque. So that's very good information that you want to have. If you have any military personnel that is a relative of yours, and if they are deceased and you want to know how to get their records, this is the way you get them. And how long does it take? It takes a while. That's why I had all my records sent to me, and it took quite a while for my military records to come. And usually takes between 12 weeks to 3 months to process. And that's because there's so much or so many people asking for these records. And the available information that you need is the name of the individual, the service number, the date of service, the branch of service, his final duty status, and his final rank. And when I say his, I mean his or her. Other things you don't need, their salary. If you don't know where they served, or you know, you don't have to worry about it, because giving them the name and the service number, and if you don't have the service number today, is a Social Security number, and so they use both. When I went in the Marine Corps, I did not use my Social Security number. They didn't use it back then. We had a service number other than our Social Security number. But when I got all my records back, all my records do have my Social Security number on them. So they do cross-reference with everything. So anyway, I see that it's almost time for our commercial breaks. So you want to do it now?
Absolutely. You're getting so good at this, David. I'm so proud of you. You don't need me anymore. You're flowing and your time's perfect.
Rusty, you teach me well.
I'm very humbled by that. You're listening to Living and Thriving. I'm sorry, you're listening to Ask UPI with David and Rusty, and I apologize. My head is in cold land, and hopefully I will be much better next week. But if you have any questions, comments, concerns, thoughts, commentary, or you just wanted to plain old give us a shout-out and say hello, feel free to dial in 347-850-8812. We'd love to hear from you. This is a live show that we air every Monday night, and David shares his wisdom, and we're always looking for sponsors.
In a world where businesses are plagued by overwhelming numbers of difficulties, one support network will rise to protect business owners from devastation. Dreams Woven Support Network. Under the guidance of the experts at Dreams Woven, business owners will be able to stay focused and stay motivated as they work their way toward their dreams. To run a business is to fight in a battle against a fleet of hardships that threatens to bring the business toward failure. To win that battle, one must have the adequate resources and a plan to combat the seemingly endless barrage of hardships. With the power of the Dreams Woven Support Network, obtaining the resources and plan for the battle of business is simple by using the multitude of tips and resources provided by Dreams Woven. One will be able to vanquish any hardships that arise and bring one's business to success. $8.97 is all it takes to acquire the power of Dreams Woven. Sign up today at DreamsWovenSupportNetwork.org to achieve success for your business and to have your dream woven into reality.
Are you an individual or company looking for the best place to list and promote your products? Waste not a minute longer. Advent.com provides the best platform to help you sell and promote your product. Visit ADVETT.com today.
That is all I have this week, David. The floor is yours,
good.
My friend.
we're gonna go back to one thing that we talked about a while back, because I've been getting requests for this to come back, and that is the unwanted sales calls that you're getting on your phones while you're eating. You know, all these telephone numbers and the 800 numbers that come through, the 900 numbers, and please don't ever answer a 900 phone call number. That's a do not do. You just do not do it. Just let it ring. If it's going to go into your answering machine, let it. And that goes for your cell phone also. You can get into a lot of trouble by answering a 900 number. But if you do not want any of these annoying phone calls anymore, and this is for you, Joe, you want to call 1-888-382-1222. Again, that number is 1-888-382-1222. And they're going to ask you questions, and it's all done electronically. And so you're not speaking to a real person. But you want to make sure that whatever phone that you want blocked, that you do not want calls from, you're using that phone. It's called the Do Not Call Hotline, and it's a you can do it by phone, or if you'd like to do it by online, you go to donotcall.gov, G-O-V, and you put the phone numbers down that you don't want anybody to call for these unwanted and unsolicited phone calls. So you can use that number, like I said, to call your cell phone and or your house phone, the landline. And you want to make sure that you do this, because it takes at least 31 days for that to take, you know, to be in effect, and it should slow down these unwanted calls. And if you don't want to have unsolicited mail or emails, you want to call the opt-out number, which is 1-888-567-8688. Or you can visit the opt-out site at www.optoutscreen.com, and that's optoutprescreen.com, and that will slow down a lot of these emails, unsolicited emails that you get, and you're trying to figure out why in heck you're getting them. These do work. Also with Experian, they have the opt-out. TransUnion has the opt-out. And Equifax has the opt-out. And you want to make sure that you hit the right button when you hear all the different options that you have to opt out when you call that number. And if you're doing it by email, you want to put down Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. Because if you don't, then you're still going to get annoying calls from these people because they do give our information out even though they say they don't. Don't think they do. That's how they make their money. So I wanted to bring that back because I've been asked to give that information out again. And so it's right there. And again, that opt-out number is 888-567-8688. Now, we're going to get into a subject here that really hasn't got anything to do with private investigating unless we're called upon to investigate a road rage incident. So obviously, we're going to deal with road rage and how to deal with it. Road rage is a growing problem on our highways, and learning how to deal with it can help you sidestep the dangerous nightmares that often follow an aggressive road rage incident. And first, we're going to give a definition of road rage. A motorist's uncontrolled anger that is usually provoked by another motorist's irritating act and is expressed in aggressive or violent behavior. And we've seen it on TV. I've personally investigated when I was a police officer an incident of road rage where somebody actually pulled a gun on another person and he shot that person. There's some crazy people out here. There really are. And while we're giving the definition of road rage, we're going to give the definition of aggressive driving. And this definition comes from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration defines aggressive driving as anybody speeding, exceeding the posted speed limit, or driving too fast for the existing conditions of the roadway, improper signaling and lane changing, failing to use your directional signal as an intent, using an emergency lane to pass, or passing on the shoulder, or cutting into another vehicle's path, tailgating, and everybody loves tailgating, driving near the back of another car at too close of a range, driving in improper lanes, traveling too slowly, in passing lanes, typically this would be the left lane on all your highways, and ignoring the keep right except the pass rule, causing other drivers to perform more frequent lane changes. Now, the best thing you can do is you should back off from an aggressive driver. Stay away from them. If you can pull off the road into a safe area, into a rest area, or off an exit, pull into a store where there's plenty of people, a gas station, then you want to do that. You must realize that you can't control another driver's behavior. You can control your own, though. When another driver cuts you off, how you will react will determine what happens next. If you are able to back off, take a deep breath, and remain calm, then you can defuse a potential violent situation. True, you might need to vent about the driver tailgating you all the way from town, but you know, at least you're not getting into a confrontation with anybody. You can talk to a friend, a family member about your driving experience. Telling the story can relieve your stress. Some driving clubs are online discussion for this type of situation in road rage. And driving is all about having a good attitude. If you're having a bad day, then your driving habits will reflect the way you feel. And we've all been there. You know your own driving skills. And that's very important. What if you are an aggressive driver? Analyze your driving style and whether you are susceptible to road rage. If you are, consider changing your own driving habits. Aggressive drivers routinely tailgate, use their horn, flash their headlights, change lanes quickly and often, gestures to other drivers, point blank, giving somebody the finger, and believe it or not, talking on their cell phones while driving. That is a sign of an aggressive driver. Changing your driving habits is not easy. You'll need to be patient and study safer driving habits. And if you're having a problem, and some people really do have a problem with this, consider signing up for a driver's education course, or better yet, personalized training. Of course, the other extreme is the instigator, the driver who infuriates other drivers by driving under the speed limit, skipping the turn signals, not using them at all, slowing down early for exits, accelerating unevenly, and hogging lanes. If this sounds like you, maybe you've already been the victim of road rage. If you are the instigator and have avoided a road rage confrontation, then congratulations. Regardless, now is the time to improve your own driving habits before you provoke a bad situation. Remember, you are sharing the road with other motorists, pedestrians, and cyclists. And when we're talking about cyclists, I mean, anybody who drives down the seacoast in the summertime knows that the bicyclists are everywhere. And some people really get upset with it. Now, I just take it for granted they're there. You know, just give them the right of way, move out of their way. And the roads on our seacoast are not that wide. We don't have a very large breakdown lane. And these cyclists are everywhere. It is only fair for you to recognize that people are going to work, school, or important appointments, and driving under the speed limit is inconsiderate. You can pull over and let others pass by. Then they have this medical basis for road rage. Why do some drivers get worked up during a daily commute? Some doctors believe there is a medical basis for road rage. The National Institute of Health sponsored a study, and they looked at road rage in drivers. And one of the things they looked at is that drivers, typically, statistics show that the road rage driver is usually a teenager around 19 years old who just does not care. And his temper flares up easily. And they call this intermittent explosion disorder, IED, was identified as the cause of road rage. Losing your temper used to be just bad form. Now it has a diagnosis and can begin in early teens. People diagnosed with IED have had multiple outbursts that are way out of proportion to the situation at hand. Generally, somebody gets hurt or property is damaged. Whether or not you believe in medical basis for road rage, you still need to know how to deal with it. Uncertain situations can escalate unpredictably. And the best advice is to avoid confrontations altogether. If you tend to provoke other drivers or are on the aggressive side of road rage, put some effort into learning new driving habits. And for those of us who run the middle of the road, maintain those defensive driving skills and keep a watchful eye on developing hazardous situations. Now, you know, it's not going to get any better because we have so many vehicles today on the road that it's just unbelievable. And I think we've all seen these people that drive so darn fast, it looks like you're going backwards. But remember, you know, aggressive driving is a problem, and it's not going to go away. And so you have to deal with it. And like I said, driving safely, you got to make sure that you have a good attitude when you get behind the wheel. I mean, how often have many of us gotten into an argument or got our danders off, and we get into our vehicle and we just take off fast? I mean, you know, because we're upset. That's the reason why we have to be aware of this, and we could be causing somebody a big problem. You can go online and you can look at all these different incidences of road rage. All you have to do is Google road rage, and they have all kinds of videos of people who have lost control physically of themselves. And the things that they come out with, I mean, it's amazing that more people aren't getting out there and duking it out, I mean, actually having fist fights on the road. And these things do happen. And, you know, I have a son who lives in Massachusetts, and it's just unbelievable. His driving habits are just aggressive, and I have to talk to him about it. He is a firm believer that if somebody is getting on the highway and they're coming from an exit or an on-ramp, and he will not give way and yield to that individual because, like he says, as they're coming down the on-ramp, there's a yield sign that everybody is supposed to yield to the traffic that is flowing on the highway, which is correct. But not everybody does that. If you're on the highway and you see somebody coming onto the highway from an on-ramp, and if you can move over to the left lane to give them some distance and some room to get going, then by all means, please do it. Just because they have that yield sign, you know, be a courteous driver. Just move over. It doesn't do you any harm at all. If you don't move over, could be involved in a motor vehicle accident. Is it going to be their fault? Yes. But do you want to go through all that rigmarole and go through all that paperwork just because you did not move over and just let him go? I mean, it's amazing how people drive today. And some people don't have a clue. You know, and everybody thinks that the worst state to drive in, you know, is New York City and Chicago, Boston. You know, they say that everybody's rude. Well, I got news for you. You know, one of the number one states 2 years in a row is Alabama. And don't ask me why, but it is. And if you don't believe me, you can look it up online. But the idea is that we all share the road. So, you know, and when I mean we all share the road, that's with pedestrians. And by the way, everybody has to yield to a pedestrian, whether you want to or not, you yield to a pedestrian. The state law in New Hampshire is you exercise due care while driving. Well, due care means that if you have to slow down, you slow down. It means if you have to move over to let somebody by, you do it. You drive defensively, and you keep focused on your driving, not on everything else. And these cell phones can be a big problem. I've seen people read newspapers while they're driving. I mean, that's totally ridiculous. How in hell can anybody drive safely reading a newspaper? I've seen people eating while they're driving. I've seen a guy shaving while he's driving. What is this with women have to look in the rearview mirror to make sure their hair is okay while they're driving? Why do you have to comb your hair? Can't you do that once you get to your destination, once you're stopped? I mean, it's amazing what some people will do while they're driving. And I don't think they actually know what they're doing or that they're doing that. But potentially, they are a danger on the highway. And obviously, now, do I get worked up about it? No. I don't. I look at them and I say, how stupid is this? And it really is. No common sense. And the thing is about common sense, I've said it before, you can't teach common sense. Either people have it or they don't. And that's just the nature of the beast. I talked about my oldest son, and he is one of the brightest individuals that I have ever met. I don't know where he got it from, because it sure the heck wasn't from me. But anyway, he has so many degrees that it's unbelievable, and cannot walk and chew gum at the same time. It's amazing. But yet, he is in a position that is just unbelievable, and I just shake my head every time I think about it. He has a top secret clearance, and he works for the government, and he does a great job. Matter of fact, he's a team leader on his job, and he works for the Pentagon, and I wouldn't drive with him if my life depended on it. He's probably the worst driver I've ever seen. But yet, you put him and you give him a task to do, and he will do it better than anybody you've ever seen. But anyway, it takes all types in this world, and that's just the way it is. You know, we accept everything. On this road rage thing, you can go on the internet, and there's a section that is put out by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration that you can take this quiz, and it will tell you if you have road rage tendencies or not. And I urge everybody to go on it, because all it is yes and no. And the more no's that you have, that rates how well you are as a driver. And there are 37 questions on this particular quiz. And I tell you, it's amazing what you'll learn about yourself if you take the quiz. I'm going to probably download this thing on our website so that everybody can have a chance to get it and use it. Because, like I said, you probably learn something about yourself and what your driving habits are all about. Driving safely, defensively, and be courteous to other drivers on our roads. Remember that we are all accountable for our own actions, and that also means that we are accountable for the way we drive. So, you know, we all drive, or most of us do, and be safe. Watch out for the other guy, you know, and that's what driving defensively means, watching out for the other person. And that goes, too, in, you know, for parking lots. Don't race through a parking lot thinking that, you know, you're going to be fine, because you got vehicles pulling in and you got vehicles pulling out. And you got people walking to and from stores, and eventually you could probably have a problem, and that problem would be either hitting another vehicle and, God forbid, hitting a pedestrian, because you're going to be liable for it one way or another. So please watch what you're doing, be careful driving, and just use good common sense if you have it, and if you don't have it, then just drive defensively and watch out for the other person. And don't be preoccupied while you're driving. Pay attention to what you're doing. It could save somebody's life.
There's a lot that people do, and there are a lot of things that we feel that we have to do. And I know personally, as a full-time single mom with not having any of my supports in this area, I worked a double on Friday. I had a fever of 103 and drove home. Very, very sick. I never should have, but what option did I have? Walk?
Well.
So it's one of those things that, you know, hindsight's 20/20, and I probably could have gotten into a terrible accident not even realizing what was going on. So it's beyond being a distractive driver. It's also being a healthy driver.
You know, driving is a privilege, and people don't understand that, and they abuse the privilege, just like everything else. You know, how many drinking and driving or drugs and driving? I mean, if you're under the influence, you're under the influence. But aggressive driving, you can do something about it, and you should do something about it. If you're an aggressive driver, change your habits, and you don't have to get upset. Like it said, you know, take a deep breath, get off the road, walk around, you know, do anything to diffuse yourself, because you're going to get in trouble. And never mind with the law, you know, nobody wants to have a confrontation with somebody out in the roadway. That's no way in hell do you want to get involved in that. These are strangers out there. You never know what they're going to do. And if somebody pulls a gun or a weapon out, you're in a world of hurt. So, and what about if you have your children with you, you know, or you have a family member with you, you know, you're endangering them also. So just drive courteous and drive defensively. And that's all I've got. If there's anything anybody wants to hear or want to comment or say, anybody can email us. Any questions you want, because obviously people aren't calling in. But if there is anything, you can just jot it down in an email at David, D-A-V-I-D, at Standa, S-T-A-N-D-A, .com, and then we'll be glad to answer any of your questions at all. I hope you learned something today, and if you didn't, well, keep coming back. Eventually you'll get something that you'll need. And we thank you for listening to our show.
And until next Monday, we hope that you are safe and have a terrific week.
You are listening to Ask a PI Talk Radio with hosts David Duchesneau, author, PI, former Marine and former New Hampshire State Trooper, and Rusty McDonald, PI, author, motivational speaker, and international radio talk show host.